Welcome to the You Can Be Unstoppable podcast. My name is Ewelina Szczeplewska, your host and certified hypnotherapist. In this podcast, I will share with you how to tap into the power of your subconscious mind. I intend to share with you how learning how to use the power of your subconscious mind can help you to create successful an abundant life with ease, how to connect with yourself while fostering a healthy relationship with your body and mind. Tapping into the power of the subconscious mind will help you to learn how to manage your emotions, become more resilient and present in all of your relationships. Self-love and self-worth are the keys to the kingdom of success and abundance, to happy and healthy life on your terms. Hello, hello, welcome to another episode of You Can Be Unstoppable. I want you to welcome Natalie Ryan Herbert, my friend, my teacher, and a colleague, if I can say this, over the years. So welcome to the episode.
Thank you, Evelina.
The transformational therapist coach who uses fine-tuned intuition to help people shed the layers of conditioned limitations. Absolutely love that.
Yeah, it's a good way to put it. That's what it is. You know, there's so much. We're our own bottlenecks to everything that is out there potential-wise for us and within us, but we hold ourselves back. And so I love helping people to, I call it shedding the skins, because it's much like a snake has to shed its skin every time it grows a bit bigger, or a tree has to shed its bark if it wants to expand into the next version of itself. And I think we are the same, and it's just how many times are you willing to shed the skins, and are you brave enough to let them go so you can become more? So that's a lot about the work that I do that I'm really passionate about, helping people grow into their potential faster and less, with less effort as well, because we struggle a lot against the potential within us trying to expand us and these conditioned limitations that want to just keep us, in inverted commas, safe, even though it isn't really safety.
Like this, it's like shedding, you know, like this snake sheds the skin when it grows and evolves. And that's exactly, that's, you know, we need to be able to let go of our past limitations to grow. But how would you suggest someone who is stuck and it doesn't really know what to do? Because that was definitely me. Like, I was stuck in my vicious circle of limitations, but I didn't know how to get off that hamster wheel. So if you presented with a client like that, where would you direct them first in terms of their beliefs and the past conditioning, where they can start take that first step?
The first thing I do when I work with someone is first we need to just talk. And so you can just, you know, let it all out. Tell me what's going on. How are things? Where do you feel stuck? And I listen for the words that stand out to me, because people get stuck in different ways. For some, they'll talk a lot about money, for example, and feel like, oh, I just feel bad charging, or I don't know, I'm afraid of what people are going to think if I put my prices up, or I'm a healer, so I feel bad asking for money. And so they'll just blurt out, and I go, okay, I can see what's in the way here for you. This is money stuff. This is down to believing that you offer enough value to charge what you do. And so we have to sort of work on that. So that would be one area, for example. The other might be, I'm afraid of getting too many clients. I'm afraid of taking too much on. And why this fear is there is because they don't have a really strong inner integrity, a part of them that's going to stand and say, I know how to look after myself. They're not putting themselves first, and they know it. So this is where you might not realize it, but you have unchecked people-pleasing tendencies that make you feel unsafe to take on too many clients because you know that there's no end to what you'll give. People who, for example, will answer messages after hours, who will get on a call with clients who haven't paid for that part of it, but will sit and have an hour talk with them outside of their session that's not part of the package, or just overgive and not feel safe that they can hold the boundary for themselves. So that comes out sometimes where people are feeling burnt out and they haven't even already got that many clients, or so it's a capacity issue. So that might be what it is. Now, where did you ever get this belief that you could only be liked and accepted if you overgave? And it's a self-worth thing, really, when you see that, because they feel like they have to compensate for something that is lacking within them instead of realizing I'm already valuable as who I am, and what I give, I receive in a transaction equal to the value, not I have to keep giving more. So there are a couple of examples, and I've got many more, but we'll go into that, I suppose. We'll talk, I'll let you get a word in.
I believe that a belief is just a story that we repeated over and over, and so often and for so long that it became our beliefs. And also, beliefs can be something that we've heard from our parents over the years and throughout the childhood, that it became part of who we are. And what I find quite often is people don't tend to pose and say, why do I believe this? Is this even true? You know, can I let this go? Do you think this is one of those things that really hold people back from even opening themselves up to the possibility of what else is out there for them?
Oh, definitely. You know, these beliefs that we hold really do run our behavior. And so many people are just running this behavior, thinking it's all that's available to them, that this is fate in a way. Carl Jung says that until you make the subconscious beliefs conscious, they will direct your life and you will call it fate. So it does take that, you know, when you start to question beliefs, they're already losing their power over you, because you're able to take it from behind the scenes where it's kind of doing, treating you like a puppet and pulling all the strings on you and you don't even realize it, to actually looking at it and saying, why do I do that? Of all the things that I could make this mean, this is a question I often ask my clients, what are you making this mean? Because whatever you make it mean, it's just your belief looking for confirmation of itself. So if you have a belief that I'm not good enough, you know, very, very common one that really does hold people back, then when you walk into a room of strangers, perhaps a meetup event, something like that, and people don't smile at you, that belief will say, you see, you're not good enough, you don't belong here, they're better than you, you should just leave. Instead of someone who didn't have that feeling or who'd healed that and cleared that would be, okay, cool, all these new people, no one's smiling at me yet because they don't know me, but they're going to get to know me. And they wouldn't let that in and make it mean what they already believed. So I think that's a really important thing to understand, that our beliefs are always looking for confirmation of themselves, and we'll project our own beliefs onto neutral situations and then call it proof and strengthen the belief. And that's the other thing about these beliefs, is that they strengthen themselves over time because they find proof of themselves. So they're quite difficult to shift unless you start to question, do the deep inner work to find out where these beliefs came from in the first place, back when you were a child, usually between the ages of 0 and 7, as you know, when we are like sponges, we are open to suggestion, we're learning about the world, we're laying down our program that is best going to help us not be happy, not thrive, but to survive in the world. Life just wants you to live. That's its one main objective. And so we're programmed to create a program that keeps us safe, but it doesn't necessarily help us to become all we want to be, because playing it safe keeps you small.
Absolutely. It's really powerful what you said, because when think as humans, we've got a tendency to shy away, to hide, because we don't want those uncomfortable feelings. We don't want to look at them. So we stuffed it away, hoping that it's just going to go away, which, as we know, it doesn't really work that way. And we shove those emotions, those past beliefs, things that don't work for us, causes pain, into the shadows. But when we shine the light on it, when we actually see them, they lose power. Yeah. And it's that contradiction, because we tell ourselves, I don't want to look at that because it's uncomfortable. But then if we shine the light on it, then, you know, they lose power. And I always say to clients, choose the pain that you want. Do you want to continue with the pain of not looking there? Or do you want to just choose pain of doing the work?
The pain of not looking there versus the pain of doing the work. Yeah, and the pain of doing the work, we do, I mean, even when I have sessions myself, I feel that reluctance and that resistance come up, because I know, and I'm used to it, so I don't stop. I go, yep, this must be a doozy this time, because it really doesn't want me to uncover it. But then the rewards on the other side are so great, the freedom. And I think the pain that we're feeling, it is that feeling of, it's like a hermit crab has crawled into this protective shell, but then the hermit crab grows and the shell is just, you can't live with it anymore. You've got to get out. So it's not safe anymore to stay in that shell. You will be crushed. Your potential won't be able to expand, and you will feel stuck, depressed, lost, stagnant. And that is, I think, the pain that drives us to transform, when we realize I actually can't stay here. This isn't safety. I thought it was, but actually, if I don't get out of this restriction that I can feel, then I'm going to be crushed by my own resistance. And so
I guess hold on to it, because there were the strategies that we developed over the years, and there were some degree helpful, I guess, when we created them. Unfortunately, over the years, they've lost the power to do what we want them to do. Yet we keep holding on to them. Why would you say it's so strong in people that need to stay where they are and not going out of the comfort zone to grow and evolve and do the work? And yes, it's uncomfortable, but the rewards are great.
I think because the belief has been, the strategies, the beliefs, the coping mechanisms have been set up, and within them is sort of this code that says, this is the only way you're going to be loved. This world is the only way you can be safe. This is the only way you're going to belong. And if you get rid of this, you are going to be in the wilderness. And so we hold on to it thinking, I cannot ever lose this. This is protecting me, because it's set up by a very young version of ourselves. That so on one hand, it's set up for, say, a two-year-old that may be misinterpreting what's happening as well. You know, it is the perception of a child that sets something up. And I'll give an example, because it's, you know, it's all very intangible when I speak about it without examples. So let's say this is a client scene that has just stuck with me for, it's just so visual and so moving. So she came to me because she was just really indecisive. She couldn't make decisions. She had a part that was protecting her from making decisions. But, you know, you can't get to 47 and not make decisions in your life if you're a business owner. You have to be decisive, otherwise it slows you down. So this protective measure she'd set up was really becoming quite dangerous for her to keep. So she knew that, but she wasn't sure why she found it so difficult to trust herself. And one of the scenes that she went back to in hypnosis was when she was 2 years old. Her mum was always stressed and upset that the house was always a mess. And so this little girl thinks, I know, I'll help mummy and I'll clean the kitchen floor. And so she gets the dishwashing liquid and she squeezes it all over the floor and she just starts putting her hands in it. She's having a great time. She's thinking as well, mummy's going to be so proud of me, so happy that the floor's all clean. Because in her two-year-old mind, that's what it felt like she was doing. So that's her idea. She thinks she's going to be praised. It feels good. And her mother comes in and shouts at her and gets very upset and throws her hands in the air. And, you know, it's like the worst thing she could have done. And this creates this massive confusion. And this is where these beliefs that come to protect us get laid down, through that confusion, through cognitive dissonance. On one hand, I thought that mum would be happy and would praise me, that I was helping. But now I've actually upset her. She's very angry with me. And this must mean I can't trust myself. My decisions are bad. The things I think are good are wrong. So I'm never going to trust myself again. I'll always look outside myself and check, what do other people want me to do? And I'll just do that. And that had been running her life for 45 years. So where does the shift come? It's when she's able to look at it with her 47-year-old understanding and say, what an amazing little two-year-old, what a beautiful heart, what a great idea. The execution wasn't great because I was 2 years old, but the idea was lovely. I do know what to do. I do have great ideas. And now I'm 47, I can clean a floor. I can clean a floor very well. I'm not that little girl anymore. I'm not that toddler. And she reconnected her self-trust. And we created that safety to begin to trust herself again. And it just built over time that she started to make small decisions and trusted herself. And I'm going to let you talk in a minute, but I've got this train of thought. The other thing that will happen then when you don't trust yourself, the way it solidifies this belief that you can't trust yourself over time, is that you disconnect your gut instinct, your intuition, the part that sort of gives you ideas. You say, no, I'm never listening to you again. You got me in big trouble. Your advice is not wanted. I'm never listening again. So then what happens is you make decisions where your gut doesn't get a say. And of course, things go horribly wrong. And then you use that as proof that you can't be trusted. Which is ironic, because had you just listened to your gut, things probably would have gone well. And this is how we stay stuck. And this is why we're afraid to let go. So it's just getting that clarity of, oh my gosh, I see it all. And once you see it, you're free.
I resonate so much with that story, because I was someone who could not make a decision, even in terms of like, what do I want to eat? Simple things. You know, I was stuck in indecisiveness, and everyone around me saw this, and I was like, oh, but I don't know, maybe we'll see. Now I know why I was doing this. You know, it was stopping me from showing up and shining, because my story around me, everyone was putting me down, like, who do you think you are? And every time I wanted to show up and show, you know, for myself and do the things, they were like, what do you think? Like, why would you even thought about doing such a thing? You know, so I totally disconnected myself from my body and from my intuition, which is amazing in the wrong way, because I'm a generator. And for me, being connected to my instinct and to my gut is exactly where I need to be. Like, I was completely disconnected from that. So I so resonate with that story and sympathize with this woman, because I've struggled with that for a very long time as well. And it does causes a lot of frustration, because as you say, we come up with people, places, situations. They constantly prove to us that this is where, you know, where we are, this is our beliefs, this is how we are. Yet at the deeper level, at the soul level, we know that we are here for more. And I think that's where also that frustration, that depression, the anxiety comes in, because we've got our soul self that knows we are here for so much more, we are capable for so much more, we are lovable, we are abundant. Yet the 3D self, the conditioned self, is telling us a different story. But now we need to be brave enough, courageous enough to do the work. And that's where, you know, you and I comes in.
Yeah. And once you do start doing your own work, where you start bringing your shadows into the light and you realize how we work, you realize how you've been operating, you also look around and go, my gosh, everyone's operating like this. And those people who say to me, who do you think you are? Their shadow is being triggered by my light. Yeah. And so then you say, oh, that poor person. They're saying, who do you think you are? Because really they're speaking to themselves. The part of them that would love to do what you're doing, would love to be brave enough to get out there, be a public speaker, go on a podcast, do a video live, get out and run a workshop, chase the dreams. Well, I could never do that myself because, you know, their childhood probably, they got messages of stay normal, fit in. You're only going to belong if you fit this mold. So it's frightening when you step out of that mold. It triggers something painful in them that says it's not safe to do that. When I tried to do that, I was put back in my box. So I don't like that you're doing it. It makes me feel really uncomfortable. That's all it is. And when you can see that, you don't have to let it in. You can say, I hope that by me stepping out of my box, I'm going to inspire you to do the same. You will either inspire people or you will trigger them, and both are medicine. Both have power in them. So don't be afraid if you trigger people and they get upset by what you're doing. Just remember, it's not about me. It's all about them. It's their stuff. It's their conditioning. It's their shadows. It's them being triggered. And hopefully that experience of being triggered will wake something up in them. You know, I actually welcome being triggered. If I'm triggered by something, I think, okay, what's this? Wow, that was a strong emotional reaction to that thing. What is it that that person is doing that I won't allow myself to be, do, or have? And there's always something in it. There's always potential growth.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I'm like you. I used to didn't like triggers because I didn't like to feel those uncomfortable emotions, so I would run away from it. But now I'm like, oh, I got triggered. It's like, okay, what is this telling me? Like you say, where am I running away from? What is that I'm hiding? What is this person telling me? Because like what you said, which is exactly, you know, where I'm at with you, is that mirror image. That, you know, we meet people who mirror back to us the things that we need to work on. And when, like you say, people say to you, who do you think you are? They say this to us through the prism of their beliefs and how they see the world and how they see themselves. And that's where the beliefs and stories and habits comes, you know, all of this form parts of identity. So we need to do the work to change this. And so would you say, as we grow and evolve, it doesn't just go, okay, that's done and dusted, I'm done growing and evolving. What would you say happens when we hit that upper limit and we feel uncomfortable again? What would you say is the best step forward when we do that? Because I think once we do some, I think I was that person, you know, like the first time I worked with a coach, and I was like, oh, this is amazing. I feel so much better. I feel so much better about myself. And then about 6 months to a year after, what I didn't know was I hit the upper limit. And I was like, I don't get it. Like, I felt so good over last year. And now I feel uncomfortable again. It was almost like, I didn't go back, because I can't say that I went back, but exactly, I hit the upper limit. I was ready to grow and evolve and upscale again. I didn't notice. It took me another whatever months before I like, no, I need to do something about this. So for people who don't know about this, because that was me, what would you say to someone who, you know, it was brave enough, you know, courageous enough, worked with you or me or anyone out there, and after a few months they feel uncomfortable again and they say, oh, this doesn't work, I went back, which they didn't, they just had another upper limit. How would you advise them to go forward from there?
Yeah, well, I would probably speak in analogies, as I always do, and say, do you think a snake would get upset every time it had to shed its skin? No, it would celebrate and think, my gosh, have I grown into my, did I grow into this skin already and I'm ready to shed it and upgrade to my next level? This is amazing. Wow. You know, celebrate. If you've hit that wall, don't be like, oh, I'm so hopeless. I can't believe I'm stuck again. It's, wow, I must have expanded so rapidly that I've already hit the next upper limit. And so now I'm ready to, and beyond this is even more magic for me. But beyond this is where I get to be into my next level identity. So what's in the way? What's stopping the flow? Where's the debris in the river that means that everything's getting banked up and that the energy's not flowing? And that's a question that is, you know, you can journal it and try and get an idea, like just free write and go, what's actually going on with me? You know, because sometimes if you get in your head and you just go round and round and round, you just get into analysis paralysis. But free writing without thinking, just blah, 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 just let it all fall out of you. Yeah. You surprise yourself with what you come out with, and then you can read over it and go, aha, so that's what's going on with me. Look for the key words of where you might be stuck, what you're afraid of. And then, I mean, ideally work with someone like Alan Watts, the philosopher, used to say, you can't bite your own teeth. Not that you'd want to, but, but you know, you can't fall into something while being a solid container. You know, we can come so far on our own, but I think there's just nothing better than having somebody experienced who sort of got the codes that you need as well. It's not 100% necessary, but for me, when I work with a therapist, I like to work with someone who's already embodied what I'm coming through, because I know that there's something about their understanding. They've already got the capacity that I'm looking to grow into myself. So I'm not saying it's a must do. There are plenty of therapists who may have no experience with what you're at, but have the tools and the skills to help you access your own wisdom on it. But it does, I think, help to feel that trust that, okay, you know this, don't you? Oh yes, I've walked this path myself. Okay, good. And you feel safe that the therapist you're working with really deeply understands what you're going through. And for me, I think a lot of what my clients are paying me for is not the tools that I have, but the wisdom and the experience and the sort of the map that I have of all of this, so that I can lead them into their next level, because I know the way, because I've already been there.
I guess to put my last question, thank you. As I come up with plenty more, I'm sure I can. You know, when I introduced you, you know, in your bio, it says, you know, either you help people to shed the layers of conditioned limitations, which I totally agree, because we come here, you know, tabula rasa, blank, and we take on board and from family, the environment, the society, the church, all of those influences us in terms of, you know, what is our identity. However, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's aligned with our authentic self, because most of that we didn't choose consciously to take on board. It was given to us, or, you know, we took it as such because we were too young to consciously say, oh, I don't think I like that belief, I'm just gonna let it go. It was mommy and daddy, then we assume this is exactly what it is.
Continue.
Doing all this work, do you think that it helps us to then align with our authentic self? And then by doing this work, we can be more in our actions, more inspired by who we actually are. You know, because when we take action from this place where we are without doing the work, it doesn't necessarily come from the soul, from absolutely who we are. We do the work because we want to please someone else. We do the work because this is our conditionant. We do this because this is who we think we are. But when we shed all of this and we align more with who we actually are, then the actions that we take bring so much more joy and pleasure, inspiration, because we are aligned with those actions at such a deeper level. So that A very long-winded question, but I hope you...
Yeah, so I think this sort of ties into what I often say, that aspiration, authentic aspiration, leads to inspiration. So aspiration is, you know, what you hope for, what you dream of, what you feel like, oh, this is what I really want. Sometimes the aspirations can be inauthentic, meaning they're externally motivated. If I just get this brand new BMW, then everyone will think I'm, you know, successful. Mum and dad will finally know I've arrived, and dad will finally be proud of me. That's not coming from you. That's coming from, I'm going to be who I think others want me to be. And it can be a really good motivation, like a whip cracking at your back to keep you going up the mountain. But it's not the same as up the top of the mountain is that beautiful diamond you've always dreamed of, and you know you're going to get there, and you don't need a whip because the journey is what you're meant to do. And I think it's important to check, like, what are my aspirations, my hopes, and my dreams? Are they coming from a true place inside of me? Because if they're not, it can feel like a real struggle. You can feel this resistance, this resentment almost, and you can think, why do I feel so resentful about having to do this? Well, it's because your soul is quite upset with you because you're denying, you're playing a role instead of being who you are. And I think that's our biggest, I'd say, challenge, but yeah, maybe that's the word, in life, is to work out who we are. What is another thing Carl Jung says, is you spend the first 40 years, maybe it's less, of your life forming your identity, and the next 40 years undoing it. trying to
I
find
think
out,
it's 35.
Who am I? 35, that could be it, yeah.
I think it's 35. They say that after 35, we shape who we are, and then we spend the rest changing that, which it makes sense, you know, that the prefrontal cortex, grows and evolves till we're about 25. So that completely makes logical sense. And I totally agree with you here, because it takes a lot of courage, I think, personally, to stand out from the crowd, stand out from what society tells us, how we should be and how we should be living, what we should be aspiring to have. Then it takes a lot of bold moves and courage to say, actually, it doesn't feel aligned to me. It doesn't bring me pleasure. Mm. And you can see this all over the place. There's so many people who live the lives of how the society tells us to do. At some point, they realize, actually, I'm not happy.
Yeah,
so they bought into that.
Exactly. It's like they've gone all the way up the wrong mountain, and they get to the top and there's nothing there. And they go, who have I become? I don't even like myself. What have I done? Because they went up the wrong mountain for the wrong reasons. Yeah. And I have plenty of clients at very high levels who've got to the top of the mountain, and then they come to me because they're like, this wasn't it. help me to find what's real, because I've climbed the mountain and I've got to the top, and it's not what I thought it was going to be.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So instead of working towards these have to goals, you get the want to goals, where you're driven by, I'm always saying, follow the enthusiasm, because that is the language of your soul saying, it's lighting you up, it's bringing you joy and bliss. That is your soul saying, yes, more of this.
Yeah. And I think also being connected to your body, because I think as a society, we've been taught to lift neck up in our heads. And we are so disconnected from how does it feel in my body. I know of people who are so disconnected and abuse themselves to the point that it's comprehensible, but because they were so disconnected, they didn't feel the exhaustion, the pain, and then the diseases that followed. It was only when the disease happened and they were forced to stop, to slow down, to reevaluate where they are. Wow, now I get it. And I think sinking back into your body and asking your heart, your gut, your body, like, you know, everything but your head.
Because the body is sort of the subconscious mind's messenger. Whatever can't be expressed consciously will sort of will get stuck in the body, and then you'll start getting these signals of, oh, my shoulder's really sore, I've got a very bad hip. And often it's symbolic. I have clients who've come with hip pain, and when I speak to the part that's creating the pain in the hip under hypnosis, it's got a role, and it is to hold her back from taking the next step forward because it's not safe. It's really interesting how the body is the messenger of the subconscious mind. And so if you start getting aches and pains in certain ways, and they come in all sorts of forms, like I feel like I've got a stone in my stomach, my heart's really tight, it's all really tight in my chest all the time, or I feel like I've got a constant lump in my throat, or my back's sore, my lower back's really bad. All these aches and pains have emotional root causes that are just trying to find expression. And we can find them, you know, within a session. It takes 2 hours and you're like, oh, that's what that lower back pain is. Yeah. Oh, that's what that shoulder was trying to tell me. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a layered approach, I think, because I've had so many sessions and every time I uncovered something else and something else. And also from what you said, I believe we need to be ready to do the work. Because I remember being in a session, anger came up, and the person that had the session with really wanted to go there, and I was like, no, there's nothing there. It's like, absolutely no, and we didn't, because I was like adamant, and there's like nothing there. And I think it took me a few more sessions before I went, I think she was right.
There's something there. That's right. You have to meet yourself. You have to be willing to go there, and you will. The deeper you allow yourself to go, the more you can let go and surrender and just allow it to all come, the deeper the healing will be. But it has to, and this is why I think it's so important to really trust, well, the therapist you're working with, and also to have trust in yourself, which I think you build over time as you do the work. You start to feel, I'm going to be safe. And what I do with clients too to help that is that I sort of instill this feeling of, you are, whatever's there, we're putting so much love and compassion around it. I want you to feel that love and compassion for yourself, that you're staying with yourself, you're here for yourself, you're cheering yourself on, you're holding yourself through this and surrounding yourself with so much love, acceptance, and encouragement to release it, so that stuff feels like, okay, I'm going to be held here. I'm not going to be rejected, because how often do we reject ourselves for negative emotions? So no wonder they don't feel safe to surface, because we get upset with ourselves. It's not the emotion that creates the pain. It's our resistance often to it, our judgment of ourselves. Like, oh, I'm so weak. I'm too emotional. What's wrong with me? Why am I sad? I've got nothing to complain about. All the things we do to tell that part.
Yeah.
Stop your nonsense. Stop your crying. Right?
Yeah.
So no wonder we don't feel safe to express it.
Yeah. Mm. And I think that's why I love this work and this method and RTT, because it allows us to finally be courageous enough to see ourselves, to start to love ourselves and accept ourselves as we are. Because that is everything then we're able to do. And that's so much more work. And grow and evolve and feel safe to shine. So this podcast is titled You Can Be Unstoppable, because I really believe in that every one of us can be unstoppable in our own ways. There's not one way for, you know, everyone. How would you advise the listeners, if you can give us 3 steps to embrace their unstoppable self, their authentic selves, to shine and to show up as, you know, if it's them?
So it might take more than 3 steps, but I'll give you the process. Find the trigger. So be aware of, if something upsets you, get excited. Okay, cool. There's something here. There's a shadow in myself that is being exposed here. Own the emotion that comes with it. What am I feeling? Am I angry? Am I jealous? Am I really sad? What's the emotion? And then, because we're very rarely upset for the reason we think, it's very often that a wound is being triggered. It's something from a long time ago that's still sitting within us, and now something's activated it. It's like a grain of salt has been thrown and hit the wound. And the grain of salt's only really small in the grand scheme of things, but because it's hit something painful, it feels like a big deal. And whoever's thrown that salt is going to get, you know, your anger or your sadness or whatever probably put on them, even though it's within you. So you've owned that emotion. And then sitting with it, ask yourself, where do I know this from? And just sit and allow that emotion to show you where you know it from. Where do I know this from before? What's the earliest recollection I have of feeling just this way? And you might think you're upset with your colleague at work, but actually it's your brother. And you didn't, and when you go back, you went, oh my God, this is my brother I'm actually cross with. This is because he always got away with everything. And my parents had a different set of rules for him than they had for me. And I'm actually super angry about this and I've never been able to express it. Aha. Uh-huh. So that's what's going on. And then it's really about the shift happens. But first you have to go in and go, what is this really? Is to bring the adult awareness that the person you are now as a grown up, bring that awareness back to the child's experience, validate their feelings, say, I completely understand, you're right to feel this way. And also, here's another way to see it. Here's what you didn't know then that I know now. And also, that's not you anymore. This isn't going to be like this forever. Look who you grow up to be. You grow up to be me. This is going to be okay one day. The things you started to believe, they're not true. You're going to let them go. And then you solidify, you undo, you upgrade the beliefs for your younger self and you solidify the new ones. And that's really what we're doing in RTT through a very, you know, incredible process that's all done in hypnosis. But the process is kind of the same. Like, something's upsetting you. Where's it come from? Undo it, solidify. So they're the steps I would take if you're stuck.
Right. Beautiful. I think you can be managing. It's fine. I know it's such a vast topic that we could be talking for a long time because there's so many angles that we can take. Is there any final thought of wisdom that you would like to share with the listeners?
I think really the most powerful question you can ever ask yourself is, what am I making this mean? That is shining a spotlight on what you believe, because your beliefs will create the meanings. And then you can question the meaning that you're making. And that's the way to find the beliefs that drive you. So just remember that in your relationships, what am I making this mean? If something happens, what am I making this mean? And start changing those meanings just by questioning them.
Yeah, absolutely. So where people can find you, how they can work with you?
Yes, so you can go to my website. It's Natalie Ryan Hebert. So it looks like Herbert when you see it, but it's Hebert. So H-E-B-E-R-T, Natalie Ryan.
I'm sorry, I think I said
Hebert.
Your name wrong.
Don't worry, everyone does, and even the bank spells it wrong, because it's just, there's a perfect example of, we see what we know. No one knows Hebert. They just see Herbert because they just put the R in even though it's not there. So perfect example of how our brains work. So NatalieRyanHebert.com. It's /NatalieRyanHebert on Instagram, /NatalieRyanHebert on Facebook. You can just Google me on podcasts all over Spotify. I've had lots of interviews where we have lots of fascinating conversations like this one. And yeah, working with me can be a breakthrough session where you have a, you know, 30-day experience with me, or I also create custom packages for people depending on what they need.
Beautiful. So thank you very much for coming along and having this fantastic and insightful conversation.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you, and I see and hear everyone next week. Thank you for listening. If you found value in this podcast, I would like to ask you to leave a positive review explaining how this episode helped you to improve your life. I ask you to do this because this will help other people to improve their lives as well. Share and spread the love all around you. Raise your vibrations to improve your life. If you would like more transformational content like this, connect with me on Instagram. You can find a link in the description of this podcast, and I'll see you over in the next episode.